Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, it is the opening day of the 2011 World Series of Poker. And we've got the guy who does play-by-play for ESPN's coverage of the WSOP, Lon McCarron, will be joining us on the show today. Also, it's been over 6 weeks since Black Friday, the online poker shutdown of April 15th. And we still have efforts going on around the country to, if not federally, then on a state basis, get iPoker, online poker, going again. Chris Krafcik, who's a research analyst who works for some gambling industry publishers and consultancies around the world, has been keeping his eye on all of that, and he'll report to us later on in this hour. Hello, I am Paul Harrah, sitting in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, where the Bad Beat jackpot is now over $250,000. It hasn't been hit in 6, 7, maybe as long as 8 months. Meanwhile, my partner Dennis Phillips is out in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Getting ready for the World Series of Poker.
Have you been over to the Rio yet? I know that things are just starting today. They had the casino employees event that started things at noon Vegas time today, and later on at 5 o'clock Vegas time, they've got the $25,000 buy-in heads-up tournament. Have you been over there yet?
I was over there. Yeah, I've actually been there a couple of times. I was over there yesterday talking with a bunch of the guys, seeing the whole setup. Got to walk through the Amazon room and the rest of it, see how it's set up this year. They have, and it's amazing, they have a brand new feature table. State of the art. This thing is impressive. Maury has come in there. He's going to be filming and doing this for ESPN this year. Same guy that's done the NBC Heads Up and the Poker After Dark and the High Stakes Poker. And he has stepped it up a notch, is the polite way to put it.
Maury Escandani and his crew do a great job.
They do a fabulous job. But this is amazing. Modern technology. They actually drew this up on a computer, designed the whole bit, pretty much just punched a key, and it spit out all of the dimension size, everything like that, almost like a major erector set.
Mm-hmm.
And all the pieces were then punched out and shipped there, and they're being assembled for the first time. You know, you take one A and you connect it to one B and you connect it to one C, and you build this monstrous set out there. I was out there when they were testing it with some of the different lights, the strobes, the signage, everything else. I was impressed. They've got this big archway that the players that make the final table can walk through. They've got a setup if they want to. They can have like a dry ice or a smoke there to do it, to make it, to give it an atmosphere. The lighting they have above it is every color in the rainbow and combination you could dream of. When I was out there, they were setting it up for the heads-up final table, which will be the first time that set will be used, and it'll be two people going mano a mano at the final for that 25K heads-up event number two out there.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully they won't have any little snafus, but it looks like an engineering marvel to me right now. I was very impressed.
Well, that final table is going to get a lot of exposure this year, not just from people who are going to be at the Rio, but also because the 25K is going to be on ESPN. The 50K Poker Players Championship is going to be on ESPN. The grudge matches on Thursday with the rematches between Moneymaker and Farha and Chan and Seidel and Helmuth and Chan will all be streaming online. And also, of course, the main event and every other event as well. The final table of every one, or I think almost every one of the events, will be streamed either on ESPN3.com or on WSOP.com, in addition to the TV coverage. We're going to talk more about that when Lon McCarron joins us in a few minutes. I got to tell you, I can't wait to get out there. There are a whole bunch of people from here in St. Louis who are making the trip during this first week. I think since I've been going out there for 5 or 6 summers now, I always come back and I talk about how great the first week is and how great the cash game action is, since that's what I play for the most part. And I think I made a mistake here because I've got a lot of the guys who are regulars in the games here who are going to go out there. And that's the last thing I want to see. I don't want to come all the way to Vegas and sit down and see you and some of these other guys sitting down at the same table with me.
Well, it's hard to keep a good thing down. The cash games out here last year were monstrous compared to previous years, and it'd be more of the same this year. Just table after table after table. If you want DLO, if you want whatever, you name a game, they'll probably try and spread it for you. And at any level, it will be monstrous.
You know, the thing about the series is it's really interesting because I've been kind of getting more and more excited as we've been getting closer, and I'm getting on a plane tomorrow, and I'll be out there for probably the first week or so of this. As excited as I am right now, I know what I'm going to feel like a week from now. I'm going to be so sick of the walk through that long hallway between where your rooms are at the Rio and where the Pavilion and the Amazon rooms are and everything in between. You can't help it, but that doesn't take away from the fact that this is still the biggest event of the year. And the question remains, what will attendance be like? You were talking to some people out there yesterday. What's the buzz?
The buzz is actually not too good. Everybody assumes that the main event is going to be down. They're just trying to find ways to counter it. There's an intelligent bunch of guys down there at the WSOP, and they're going to do everything they can to try and keep this attendance up. They're going to run satellites the whole time, the cash game the whole time. They're trying to do everything they can to do this. I don't know how successful they're going to be. In fact, by next week, we should be able to talk about it on our show when we see what a couple of these bigger buy-in tournaments have for attendance, when we see how many people show up at the $1,000 one for this weekend, the first of, six of them I think they have this year.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's going to be telling. They're a little worried, but they know they do a good job. They've got everything set up. The dealers are ready. The cards are ready. The chips are ready. Hopefully the people are ready.
Well, you know, one thing that'll be interesting to see is last year during the series, the attendance on Sundays, particularly in cash games, was always the slowest day of the week. Why? Because that's when Stars and Tilt had their biggest online tournaments going on. This year, Sundays aren't going to have to suffer that kind of a deficit, and I think the rest of the week, you'll also have players who might be jonesing to play poker who won't be going up to the room to play 4, 5, 6 hours online. If they want to play, they're going to have to play live, and it's going to either have to be at the Rio or Venetian or Bellagio or Aria or someplace else in Las Vegas, and there are certainly plenty of those venues. The question is whether people will have the cash to play. We know Stars players have been able to get their bankrolls offline, and I'm hoping they bring that entire bankroll with them in their backpack to sit down in the cash games. I just wanted to be there for the action. That's all. But it is going to be interesting to see if they can be there and can play and have the bankroll to do it.
Well, again, we'll have to see what the heck has happened. Obviously, with Black Friday, there's been a ton of different problems. Stars stepped up to the plate. Stars has returned the money. That's a non-issue right now. But it's going to be interesting out there. You know, the one area of the World Series this year where they increased the personnel?
Where's that?
Security.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah. Well, stop and think for a minute. There's going to be a lot of upset people that are wanting their money back from Full Tilt or that lost money on Absolute or Ultimate Bet. There's going to be a whole barrage of people out there, in my opinion. They're going to be a little bit upset. If you've been following some of the threads on 2+2 and some of the other places, there are some very upset people there. And even if 99 out of 100 of the people that are upset are just mouthing word, all it takes is one idiot. They're being proactive. They hope nothing will happen. They hope people will behave responsibly. They hope that, you know, they will maintain their dignity in that. But in case they don't, they're out there and they are going to be around. Some of the other times, I mean, it's been a relaxed atmosphere. You've been able to, say, one of the pros, if he was playing in a tournament, wanted to enter another one, he'd just send somebody over with his card and say, hey, go buy me a end, because everybody knew it, and, you know, we're friendly and that. ain't going to happen this year. I'm telling you, they are going to be very strict about the rules, very strict about everything. You need to toe the line. And if you start getting a little verbally abusive or anything like that, you'll have somebody tap your shoulder.
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting to see. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how people who have money on Full Tilt react if they see any of the Full Tilt pros there, or the same for the Ultimate Bet and Absolute Poker pros, or some of the others. Those are the two biggest sites that haven't yet been able to return their cash to them. As I speculated last week, I don't think we're going to see Howard Lederer anywhere near the Rio. He was back in Vegas recently, mostly because he went to his mom's funeral. He and Annie Duke went to that, and they also went to Eric Lindgren and Eric Schoenberg's wedding this weekend. Congratulations to those two poker pros who finally tied the knot. But I don't think you're going to see Howard showing up there. The question is whether Chris Jesus Ferguson will be there and what reaction there will be to Phil Ivey and Andy Block and some of the other members of Team Full Tilt, and also Joe Seebach and Prahlad Friedman and some of the other people who have been the front men for UB, or at least the public image of UB for the last year or so. Hopefully nobody will get in their face too much, but I think they have to be ready to at least have answers for some questions, don't you?
Well, they have to be expecting the questions, and I assume then they'll have answers and they'll be able to respond to it. I think there's just going to be a lot of frustrated people, and I hope they don't take it out on the wrong guys. A lot of these guys just play poker. They're good guys. They didn't have anything to do with policies, with any of that. It's not like they got the money stuck in their back pocket and can pull it out and hand it to it. Ain't going to happen. You're not going to accomplish anything by getting in their faces. So hopefully people will behave responsible, and we'll go there and we'll have some fun. But it is going to be an interesting couple of days, I think.
Well, Full Tilt has released a new statement to its customers in which they acknowledge that the lack of communication reflects poorly on them. That's their words, not mine. And then they answer what they consider to be the most pressing questions. Number one, when will U.S. players be paid? They say, quote, "We still do not have a specific time frame for this. There has been and remains no bigger priority than getting U.S. players paid as soon as possible. We've been working around the clock to get it done." Question two, is Full Tilt bankrupt? No. Full Tilt's worldwide business is healthy, and although we've had some short-term challenges, it is operating as normal. Number three, what is the company doing to speed up payouts to the U.S. players? The answer, quote, "We are raising capital to ensure that the U.S. players are paid out in full as quickly as possible. It's important to remember that Full Tilt has always paid out our players, even in the face of previous legal obstacles or factors not in our control, such as payment processor defaults and prior actions by the government, which resulted in U.S. player funds being seized. In all of these instances, Full Tilt has covered these losses and intends to do the same again." And then question four, why are the Full Tilt pros remaining silent? Answer, quote, "It's not their choice. They are constrained by the pending legal actions." Now, I want to go back to number three there. We are raising capital to ensure that players are paid as quickly as possible. This is a company that probably owes its players between $100 and $150 million based on the kind of numbers that PokerStars has already paid out. Full Tilt is probably somewhere in that same ballpark. Their bank accounts have been frozen, although one bank account in Ireland, which belonged to Full Tilt and its CEO, Ray Bitar, who is one of the people indicted by the Department of Justice, that was recently unfrozen by the DOJ. That had about $35 million in it. That doesn't cover $100 to $150 million that they owe their players. So now they say that they're looking for people to invest in this. You're raising capital. You want people to invest. Are you going to be able to find investors for a poker website that owes $100 to $150 million up front?
Actually, I hate to say this, but I think it's even worse than that. It's a poker site that at a very minimum probably going to have a healthy fine leveled on it from the DOJ. It's a poker site that's had its image and everything, you know, brought into question because of its lack of response and everything here. They're claiming part of the problem, part of the shortfall, is not only the bank accounts that were frozen, but even those that weren't frozen, some of the banks got scared and voluntarily shut them down. They're saying that it was almost a perfect storm. The fact that they were scrambling to find a payment processor at the exact time that they shut this down. So they had credited players with millions of dollars and had not received the funds from the banks yet. So they have that shortfall to make up.
Mm-hmm.
So the DOJ has frozen accounts. They have that shortfall to make up. It's just kind of a perfect form or storm so that they are that short of cash right now. Now then, there's too many questions out there for me. I'm more power to them. I hope they do something. I hope they find a way to get the money back to the players fairly quickly, especially before the main event. But I think it's going to have to be a hell of a deal for somebody to buy into to Full Tilt right now. It's going to have to be one hell of a deal.
Now, there's something I need to say here, and that is that Dennis has, since 2008, been a member of Team PokerStars Pro. This show, up until Black Friday, was sponsored in part by PokerStars.net. We knew a lot of the people inside PokerStars, but we also knew a lot of the people from Full Tilt. Many of them have appeared as guests on the show, including Howard Lederer, who sat down with us for an hour last summer at the Rio, and we had a great time on the air. A lot of the members of Team Full Tilt have been on this show, and some of them have been on repeatedly. We've also had some of the people who were with UB, like Phil Hellmuth and Annie Duke and Prahlad Friedman and Joe Seebach and Eric Baldwin and some of the others. So when you hear us talking about this, please don't hear any glee in our voices about the troubles that have fallen on any of these other sites. It's not like we were loyal only to PokerStars, because in the long run, we wanted this to work out for everybody. We want online poker to be available and for everyone to be able to play it legally. And more important than any of that, beyond our friendships through the show with some of these pros, regardless of who they're affiliated with, we want the players to be able to get their money back so that they can continue to play the game that we love. That's really the bottom line here. So don't ever think or accuse us of, oh, boy, you guys must be really happy that they might go out of business or they might go out of business, or even if they don't go out of business, they're having trouble. That's not true one iota.
Not even close. I'm telling you, I have friends over there. I have friends that have the money that on Full Tilt. I know these guys want to find a way to get this back, want to get this resolved. There's absolutely no question about that. And I hope they do. I honestly think everybody at PokerStars hopes they do, because they want what's best for poker players, too. They don't want to see this company go down that way in any way, shape, or form. And it's just bad for poker if it happens.
Right. Absolutely. That's
just
the bottom
bad
line.
Bad for poker.
Yep.
So, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they're working around the clock, as they say. I have no reason to doubt that. And I honestly think they will eventually find a way to get this taken care of.
Yep. You know, we look at this as, you know, almost like an airplane in trouble. You don't want the airplane to go down. Nobody's rooting against the airplane. You want everybody on there to be able to land that plane safely and be able to go and buy tickets to go on another plane sometime. That's the analogy I can come up with. All right, let's go back to the World Series of Poker. Last week, Andrew Feldman from ESPN.com held his annual WSOP fantasy draft. And again, you were invited to put together your own team. How did you put the team together, and who's on your list of, what is it, eight players?
Yeah, eight players. There were about a dozen of us that did that. Everybody from Daniel to Bernard Lee to Andrew himself that picked a team. And I won't go through all of the players and everything like that, but I think I did fairly good.
Okay.
I want to run through the first round, the draft picks there, and then we can specifically name the ones that I ended up picking.
All right.
Of the eight people, we had one new person there. Dwight Pilgrim had never done this before. He's a good guy. We thought we'd invite him. He joined us, and he has an interesting team.
May I just ask if Dwight chose himself first?
No, he did not.
I'm shocking the world. I'm gonna shock the world and choose me.
There you go. All right. Well, Dwight got to pick first. Okay.
Yep.
And I will give you five guesses as to who he picked first, and I'll bet you don't get it right.
Well, obviously, then he didn't pick Phil Ivey.
Ivey went number two.
I probably somebody he ran into on the circuit somewhere, like Faraz Jaka or Eugene Kachalov or one of those guys.
actually, it's not that bad at all. It's actually a decent pick, but it's not one of them I would have done for my first half a dozen picks. But he should be way up there. Eric Baldwin was the gentleman that he picked.
Oh, okay. Baseball, he's not a bad, you know. I don't know. I don't know that Eric plays enough no-limit events
that's
to score points.
See, that's the problem. You need to select people that are playing in all of the events. They have a better chance of cashing and making a final table in the smaller events, obviously. So you need to be playing Raz and Deuce to Seven and all these others. You can't just pick no-limit specialists for your team or you're going to run into trouble.
Right.
So that's the problem. That's why some of the names may not be in the order you would have thought of when you're naming top players. They're there for a reason for that. All right. So do you want me just to name them, or do you have any guesses who might be some of the top, top ones?
Just go through the first round picks.
Not yet. Eric Baldwin, then Phil Ivey was picked. Eric Seidel was the third pick. I had him fifth, but he's definitely on the run he's at. He's got to be the heads-on favorite to win a bracelet this year.
Well, certainly for anything with a 25K buy-in or more, he's got to be the favorite. I don't pick him in a $1,000 buy-in dunkament.
Well, okay, good point. But I got to pick number four, and I picked Daniel.
Okay.
Which was good because Daniel was number five, and he didn't want to have to pick himself. he picked Eric Lindgren.
Okay.
Who, again, great pick there. Then it was John Jawanda, Jason Mercier, Barry Greenstein, David Chu, then the grinder. And now, Dick, get this. Last pick for it was Mark Seif, S-E-I-F.
Yeah.
Mark?
Mark Seif.
He had to pick He had to pick somebody. He picked himself. I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
If Dwight can't do it, then Mark should.
Yeah.
All right. So who made up the rest of your roster after Daniel?
After Daniel. Well, when it came around there, Phil Hellmuth was available. Phil plays in all the different tournaments. He cashes several times each year usually. He's got more cashes than anybody else. I picked Phil for number two.
Yeah. By the way, not only has Phil got more cashes than anybody else, he's made 40 final tables. 79 cashes and 40 final tables.
Yeah. He's usually good for a few points.
Yeah.
Alan Cunningham was available in the third round. I snapped him up.
Good one.
Yeah. Elke was available. Now, Elke's never won a bracelet. But Elke does play a variety of them. He does play the higher stakes ones, and he's due. If you had to list half a dozen people that have never won a bracelet, I think he's going to be on your short list.
Does he play games like Deuce to Seven, Triple Draw, and Omaha High Low, and Stud, and those non-Hold'em games?
He's branching off into them. He won't play all of them, but he will play more than just the No Limits this year. And he will be playing the higher stuff. He's supposed to be playing the Heads Up for one thing. I think it's a solid pick. I don't know. David Benjamin was still available. I went back and forth between the two. But I ended up taking Elke.
Okay.
All right. Mike Manasaw for the next one. Well, I got all the old war horses. Here we go.
By the way, Manasaw tweeted today, I'm quoting off his Twitter feed, "Well, I did it again. Forgot to pay the power bill. They shut it off the fourth time this year. I'm the worst."
Oh, that's encouraging.
So Mike may not have the buy-in for all the events you wanted to be in this year, particularly if he can't get it off his full tilt account.
I wonder if I can trade with somebody.
How does a grown man get his power shut off four times in a year? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you remember a gentleman who was Player of the Year a few years ago by the name of Jeff Mattson?
Oh, yeah.
I grabbed him. He was available.
Okay, not a bad pick.
And I think I snuck that one in. I was very happy with it. The next one is kind of a guess. We got all the way down here, and Chris Ferguson hadn't been picked. Nobody's heard from Chris. Nobody knows how much he's going to play, if any. I grabbed him. That may not have been a very wise choice. I don't know.
Yeah, I would be surprised because of the full tilt thing, I'd be surprised if he was playing a lot of events this year. He may not show up at all.
And the other thing about it is that you are allowed to trade one player or substitute and put a different player in for one of your eight choices. If I find out from Chris that he's not going to be there at all, then I can grab whoever it is that's doing well so far in the tournament. So
there you go.
We'll see.
All right, let's take a go ahead.
last pick, and you always got to, it always gets interesting on the last one. Like Todd Brunson was picked, Duhamel was picked in the last round. I picked up J.C. Tran.
That's not
and
bad.
I like that pick. I like that pick a lot, actually.
Yeah, he's certainly going to play all the no limits.
Yep, yep. And, yeah. And he's done well. He's got a good history. He plays the bigger events. I like that pick. So I think I got a good solid team. It's kind of an old school team. Some of the other guys went with a lot of the youngers, you know, Trickett and some of the other guys. And then there were a few of the other old schools. Ellie Lazar got picked. Phil Locke got picked. So it's interesting.
Yeah. All right, we got to take a break here because we got to bring in Lon McCarron, who is the play-by-play guy for ESPN. They've expanded their WSOP coverage this year, and we'll talk about that when we come back as the final table continues with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at Harris St. Louis here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.
Kits, does your granny lend you money? Well, this granny does. And right now, calling 800-GRANNY-8 will get you $50,000 for just $238 per month. Call 800-GRANNY-8. Get a low fixed rate and take a three-month payment break. That's 90 payment-free days to get your finances straight. Our customers are saving hundreds per month, and our friendly loan officers make it easy. Call 800-GRANNY-8 or apply online at granny8.com.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at the feature table at Harris St. Louis, where you will have more chances in June to qualify for the main event of this year's World Series of Poker. Six more qualifiers coming up in June. On Saturday the 11th, Saturday the 18th, and Sunday the 19th. As always, the schedule and details for all the tournaments they do here are online at harris.com/stlpoker. And if you're a cash game player, this is the place to play because not only is the action great with 1-2 and 1-2-5 no limit and 20-40 limit and also the PLO games that go 4 or 5 nights a week, but also that big bad beat jackpot that is now up over $250,000, $254,000 in the bad beat jackpot. Again, harris.com/stlpoker for details on what's happening in this room. And, of course, you got a great big casino outside as well with the smokeless section right in front of us here in the poker room and lots of games throughout, table games, etc. 5 great restaurants for you to choose from. It's our home base, and even though we'll be away at the Rio next week doing our coverage of the first week of the WSOP, we're still happy to call Harris St. Louis our home. harris.com/stlpoker. Now, I mentioned that you could get into the main event this year. If you do make it to the main event and go deep enough, you could hear this guy mentioning your name over and over again. He's Lon McCarron, who for years has been the voice of ESPN's coverage of the World Series of Poker. Lon, welcome back to our final table.
Good to be here, Paul. Thanks very much, and hi to Dennis as well.
Hey, how you doing, Lon?
Very well, very well.
So this year, your workload went up quite a bit. Tell us about the expanded coverage that ESPN's planning for the World Series of Poker.
Well, I'm very excited about it, and I just thought it was something that was bound to happen. They've dabbled in it, in the last couple of years, with tables here, tables there, and now going certainly, I think, a step up in bringing action on ESPN3, ESPN2, and some on the main network, ESPN, as we get down to the end of the main event here in this July run. So it is, it's quite exciting. It will be a heavy workload during the main event. We're kind of easing into it over the next couple of days. But again, very excited, and I just think it is the future of poker, which is here right now on television.
In fact, you're going to be doing some work today. I know you guys aren't doing streaming coverage of day one of the 25K heads up, but you've got to at least wander through there and check out the field, right?
I'm actually going in tomorrow. I'm not in Vegas just yet. I'll be going in tomorrow, and certainly we'll be going through the field, checking people out, catching up with Sammy Farah and Chris Moneymaker if I can. Of course, that's one of the grudge matches we're doing. So, it's as everybody has been saying on Twitter, on their emails, anywhere they can talk, how exciting it is to have the World Series of Poker back. Push everything else that's been going on the last couple of months behind us for the time being, and let's get in and have some fun.
I don't know. Have you seen the new set that they have there that Maureen and the guys are putting together? I went down there yesterday and looked at it, and it is phenomenal.
I saw a picture of it. It looks something out of E.T., but I haven't gotten a good look at it.
Oh, this is E.T. grown up. I'm telling
is that
you,
right?
It's impressive. There's no doubt about it. I had one question. They have this nice archway for the players to come walking through. I'm still wondering, if Phil Hellmuth makes the final table, how is he going to make that entrance? They can't carry him through it. It's not big enough. So yeah, I want to see him floating in on something or other. I don't know. Whatever.
Is it big enough for his ego?
Maybe it's just a way to nip that in the bud, maybe, Dennis. Maybe he can't make that kind of entrance. Who knows? Somebody has to stop him.
Yeah. So Lon, you've been doing edited coverage of poker events, not just the WSOP, but, you know, you and Norman have done the U.S. Poker Championships in Atlantic City, and you did the NAPT for a couple of years and all that sort of stuff. But this is going to be a lot of live streaming coverage, which is hour after hour of nonstop. And, you know, you can't go back and say, oh, let me try that again or let me fix that. You haven't seen the hands ahead of time. How much of a challenge is that for you as a broadcaster?
It's something new. You know, I haven't always been doing poker and poker post-production, so I've been calling live events since I began broadcasting. So it's just a matter of preparation, and I feel I'm very prepared. And the years of working, of course, in the format that I have given me a great baseline for poker. It's great that I know you know, so many players and can talk to them. They're helpful to me. And just having that camaraderie with them as we do the broadcast also is a big bonus. And my role, you know, the format obviously is different when you're doing live coverage. And so the format will be a little bit different. But my role won't change that much. You know, it's there to move the broadcast forward. I'm certainly not there to provide expert analysis. But my role in any telecast, whether it's poker, whether it's cycling or billiards or windsurfing, whatever, is to bring the most from my expert analysis out so our audience can be as best informed as they can. And that's really my role, no matter what I'm doing, whether it's live or whether it's taped.
Well, I can see a little bit of a difference there, though. This year you're going to be able to see the whole cards at times, correct? And you're going to be able to...
At times, yeah. Not all the time. At times we will, yeah. And that will be a lot of fun, I think. I think it's also up for debate on whether it's good or not, but they had this discussion back in 2003 with the whole cards as well. And again, you're right, Dennis. It is a different format, and different players are going to have different opinions. But it is something, I think, that is good for poker, good for poker on television, and able to move everything forward in the best possible and safest possible manner.
Now, what do you mean, Lon, that we'll only see them at times? I thought that for all of these coverage, all of this coverage that you guys were doing on ESPN3.com, that we were actually going to see whole cards and unedited coverage, kind of like was done for some of the European events. Is that not the case?
Hello?
Lon, are you there? Maybe we've got Lon on a five-minute delay.
All right.
Well, welcome. We'll wait for Lon to get back in here. Go ahead, Dennis. I'm sorry.
Well, he brought up actually a fairly touchy subject right now, and there's a lot of debate around the felt as to whether this is going to be a good or a bad thing. My understanding is that when they are showing the whole cards, it's only going to be with a 30-minute delay. And there's not any kind of a sequestering or anything like has happened in some of the other tournaments. This is basically 30 minutes after your hand is over, it's going to be shown, and somebody could be watching it and turn around and walk right back down to you and tell you exactly what happened to the guy that's still physically sitting across the table, still has chips, and you're still playing against. Now, is that going to make a difference? Is that going to be an advantage to a skilled player versus an amateur or something? Or... is it just another aspect of the game that you need to get good at?
Well, Lon is back. Let's ask his opinion on that. What do you think is going to be the reaction to having all of that stuff out there for all that extra information, Lon?
Well, I think the reaction, I caught the last part of what Dennis was saying, and I think it's very normal. And somebody else asked me that. I think you're right. It can't help but have an effect on the game. How much it has is what I'm wondering. What we're going to be doing is showing 30 minutes of play on one. We have, during the main event, we have two feature tables, TV tables. We'll be showing 30 minutes of action on one, 30 minutes of action on the other one. And the hole cards will be only hole cards that are in the hand after the flop. We will not show any pre-flop hole cards. And so just the players who are in the hand post-flop will have their hole cards revealed. And then, so it depends how many hands you're in during that half hour, which definitely is not that many. And then we switch over to the other table. So we're back and forth. So, yes, there will be, you know, I don't know how many hands somebody's going to play within that half-hour window as we go back and forth. And, yeah, I'm sure they could have somebody come down. But, again, it might be just, it has to be something that players adjust to. But it's not every hole card from every player on every hand.
Okay, so that's the main event, days 3 through 8, that you're going to be streaming. And we'll have that 30-minute delay and the post-flop hole cards. What about for things like the heads-up grudge matches on Thursday and the 25K heads-up that's going on starting today and the 50K, which is the last event before the main event? When you stream those, will it be under the same circumstances?
No. From my understanding, none of those will have hole cards. That is my understanding right now. And those will be streamed on ESPN3 online. And the information I have right now is no hole cards.
Interesting. Okay, so who's going to be doing this with you? Who's in the booth?
Well, actually, it'll be from a play-by-play standpoint, I'll be sharing duties with David Tuchman. We'll be doing like an hour on, an hour off with us. And then we do have a number of pros who are interested. I don't think we've finalized with everyone. I do know that depending on, you know, who's in what tournament, who's still alive, Phil Gordon, Phil Hellmuth, Oliver Biscay, Brandon Adams, Robert Williamson III have been tapped on the shoulder to come help us if able. And I think they're also looking for other poker pros that who will be available at that time. I know Dennis Wong will be playing the main event all the way up to day 8. And we also have on the floor, actually a new addition to our broadcast team is Kara Scott this year, who will be working out in the field, and we'll have the ability to talk to her, get her points of view, interviews, insights on the game throughout the whole event. And so that's a great addition. I think she's a real strong commentator, and she'll really add a great new dimension to our broadcast.
Yeah, I agree. Kara's terrific. We love having her on our show as well. I hope you use her for more than just going to her and say, okay, so Jim got knocked out. Here's Kara to talk to him, and she has to ask him that. So what happened, Jim?
Yeah, well, no, you know Kara. Kara knows the game. Whatever question she asks is going to be a smart question if she's given enough, you know, leash. And I think obviously the only reason she's brought in is because she does have that insight and those smarts, and we want to get the most out of Kara that we certainly can.
I guess that means that Kara can't actually play the main event this year.
I believe she is. She will not, and I think she's sad about that. And a lot of people actually have pegged her to be the one that would start a new poker boom to have a woman win it, and they would pick her to do it. Of course, there's a number of other very strong female players, but at this point, Kara decided this was best for her and her career.
Wow. Well, Kara is definitely one of the better women players. Yeah, I can see why she would want to play the main event. If you had to pick a woman to be the most likely one to win the main event, she'd probably be in my top five.
So, yeah, I totally agree. And you know, a lot of people have other names that pop up. She's certainly a strong player, but there are other factors that come into play as far how well spoken she is, and how she can relate the game to. Does she, in fact, if she does win, to the common viewer, to the talk show audiences, whatever. You know, a lot of people would say Vanessa Selbst has a better chance of winning the main event than Kara, but. Again, you know, the guy next door has a better chance of winning than most people, too, in the main event.
Okay.
Very, very true. Yeah. So how about you? Will you be playing in any? I know you can't play in the main or any of the other events you're covering, but will you be entering any events?
I will. At this point, I'm just planning to go out because I already have the field thinned somewhat. I play in the seniors event when I can, and so I don't have to deal with so many internet wunderkinds out there. We have a hole in our schedule in Vegas. We're there the first part of June, and we come back at the end of June because there's really no coverage from our standpoint in between. So as a Father's Day gift, I get to go out and play the seniors event for a few days.
Got a quick question. I don't know how to word this exactly. I mean, you're sitting next to Chad, and Norman has times where he has some really interesting comments, I guess is the polite way to do it. Now, I know in the past you've done kickboxing and martial arts. Quick question. Was it serving as that fabulous host of a Scrabble game that helped you to handle Norman? The comments there.
You know what? If you lined up, and I'll say this knowing, you know, I might make some people angry, but work in the Scrabble event was very eye-opening, and I would sit in a booth 24 hours a day with Norman rather than really go back to do Scrabble. There are some very interesting characters there, and I hope I didn't burn any bridges. And I certainly, it's a wonderful sport, you know, sport and game to play.
But, no, it's too late, Lon. Lon, it's too late.
I know. No, head and shoulders, you know, Norman above that, yeah.
All right, well, let me get the plug in for all the stuff you're going to be doing. You have the 25K heads up, which is you're going to do the final table of later this week, and that'll be on ESPN3 and then edited with whole cards to air as part of ESPN's coverage of the World Series of Poker. And then you've got the grudge matches, which include Chan and Seidel, Moneymaker and Farhat, and Helmuth and Chan. All of that will be streaming on ESPN3.com, and I believe that's on Thursday of this week. Later on, there's the 50K Poker Players Championship, the one that Michael Mizrachi won at the beginning of last year's WSOP. They've moved it to the end of this year. And then right after that, the main event. So go to ESPN.com, and you'll find out when all of these things are on. There's a ton of coverage. The TV-only coverage on ESPN will be in its regular two-hour Tuesday night at 8 Central Time slot, beginning on July 26th, an easy day for me to remember because it's my birthday. So,
happy birthday to you, yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I will not be in any of these events that we just talked about, by the way. but I'll be in the cash games and wandering around, and I'm sure Dennis will be in a bunch of these things that you're going to be covering. And we look forward to seeing you out there, Lon.
Hey, well, I'm looking forward to getting out there tomorrow. Friday actually is my birthday, so I like to celebrate by watching people play poker. It's really my thing.
Well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much. And you still have time, Paul, by the way, to get out and check out the world champion San Francisco Giants, which are visiting St. Louis right now.
Yeah, I know.
You had to get that in, didn't you?
Had to get it in.
Thanks, Lon. We appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
All right, guys. Good luck to you. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye.
Lon McCarron joining us here at the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. With Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis. We're lining up our other guest right now. First, let me get a plug in for our streaming audio of this show, which is always on KFNS.com. And if you can't listen to the show live Tuesdays between 3 and 4, you can get our podcasts. You go on iTunes and you just search for Final Table Poker Show, and you can subscribe that way, or we have direct links to it as well as our own little media player where you can listen to any of the 100 and now 22 shows that we've done over the course of the last 2.5 years. You go to thechipleader.com, you click on the Final Table Show on that, which is Dennis's website, and you can listen to all of the shows. And on the right side of that page are the names of all of the guests that we've had over the last couple of years. So if you want to listen to any specific show, you can find them there. So, again, that's via iTunes or thechipleader.com. All right, ready to go with our next guest now. We've been talking a lot about potential online poker regulation and licensing for a long, long time on this show. And in this post-Black Friday environment, it's important to keep you updated on what could still happen. So I've invited Chris Krafcik onto the show today. Chris is an independent research analyst working for gambling industry publishers and consultancies around the world, and is keeping his eye on what's happening, especially at the state level. Chris, welcome to the Final Table.
Thanks very much, guys, for having me. Great to be here.
Let's start right in with what's the latest.
The latest, interesting. Well, since we're focusing on state-level legislation today, I definitely wanted to pass along the news that a bill in the state legislature in Nevada actually has passed both chambers of the legislature there. Its number is AB 258, and essentially it would allow regulators there to draft specific regulations ahead of Internet gambling or Internet poker being legalized at the federal level. So that's significant, I think. It doesn't allow Nevada casinos and Nevada businesses to do much of really anything in terms of actually operating Internet gambling. But the bill, if passed, would certainly clear the way for these guys to kind of get the groundwork laid to be ready once the federal government actually enacts Internet gambling legislation of any kind.
Well, but that bill was quite a bit watered down from its original form, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. It's so interesting. I know that I'd been listening to the show a little bit earlier, and I saw that you guys had mentioned PokerStars a bit. And PokerStars, actually, oddly enough, before Black Friday, was the primary sponsor of that Nevada bill. And essentially what it allowed in its original form was for any Internet gambling industry operator, regardless of its history of operations in the United States, to apply for a license to operate Internet poker in Nevada. And as you can probably imagine, that did not really go over well with many of the big land-based gaming industry stakeholders in Las Vegas, particularly ones that are kind of eyeing the U.S. Internet poker market and kind of attaining a very large share thereof. And so those guys and PokerStars were kind of at each other's throats and really have been for quite a while in the political arena. So not surprising, really, to see that the bill has been drastically watered down and now is in a form that is kind of squares well with, I guess, would be the way to say it, with the big land-based gaming operators out in Nevada.
Well, you've got Caesars Entertainment, which is the parent company of our sponsor, Harrah's Entertainment,
yep.
And MGM Mirage, and for a while Steve Wynn was in there trying to team up with PokerStars.
Yep,
when before we talk about other states, when this happens, do you see that the existing online sites that have had to shut down their U.S.-facing sites since Black Friday, in other words, Stars and Tilt and UB
yep.
and AP and all the rest, do you foresee a day when they're allowed back in, or do you think this will be the brick-and-mortar companies that stayed out of it, they'll have that playing field to themselves?
Well, I think it's a really interesting question. On the one hand, you know, you can look at it from a pretty black or white perspective, which is that the existing land-based companies here and the offshore internet gaming operators are really kind of at odds with each other, because the land-based companies here have been waiting a while and have been trying to do things, quote-unquote, legally to get in the game, whereas the offshore internet gambling operators really have been pushing the legal envelope. And so there's a lot of enmity there between the two sides. On the other hand, what the interesting thing is, none of the land-based gaming operators here really have anything in the way of internet gambling assets on the technology side. And so the interesting thing is, as much as these companies dislike each other, there's a certain relationship that still exists between them of necessity, meaning that the land-based gaming operators need technology partners, and very often the best technology partners out there are the companies actually that were just indicted. So it's kind of an interesting and intense relationship now between both sides, meaning the U.S. land-based gaming industry and the offshore gaming industry. And I think what you'll probably see is that at some point some of the offshore companies will be let back in simply because the land-based gaming operators here need them.
Interesting analogy. But another couple of questions. This seems to be popping up everywhere, but out of all of the 50 states, I would not have named Hawaii and Iowa as two of the predominant gaming states.
I would join you in making that judgment.
Now, I know, like, Hawaii is stressed financially. I know that there's a lot of problems in a number of states with the financial. Is it purely a financial issue? Is it why they're looking at this?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, in Hawaii, for instance, all forms of gambling are prohibited. I mean, Hawaii is so behind on gambling and so against it that they don't even have a lottery there. So to see something as kind of novel and kind of interesting as internet poker pop up in the legislature this year was really interesting. And you're absolutely right. The reasons there were purely financial. The way that the bill was written there really did not square well with any of the corporate interests that I talked to. It was drafted poorly. Nobody was really interested. But Iowa is definitely a different story. Iowa has actually a very thriving but small land-based gaming market. They have casinos. They have a lottery. So there's some basis and some familiarity with legislators there with gambling. And so to see internet poker there this year wasn't a surprise. It popped up a little bit last year. And so what's happened there this year, rather than the legislature actually going ahead with any kind of internet poker regulatory structure, lawmakers there have decided instead to initiate a study of internet poker. And so what will be done this summer is that regulators there in Iowa will actually conduct a study of internet poker and how it will affect the Iowa economy, how it will affect Iowa socially in terms of the moral side of it. And so I guess what we'll see is a study of some kind produced for the legislature and probably debated next January when the session resumes there. And the hope is for some of the groups lobbying that the study will kind of give enough information to legislatures to get them more comfortable with internet poker, and maybe next year something would pass. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Chris, you and Dennis and I are all from St. Louis. Tell me what's going on when it comes to internet poker in both Missouri and Illinois.
Oh, really interesting. Nothing really in Illinois right now. Absolutely nothing in Missouri. But I think if lawmakers here were smart, I think what they should do on internet poker, especially in Missouri, we all know that Missouri is a pretty conservative state when it comes to gambling, even though it has a pretty thriving gambling industry. I think what it could do, which would be interesting, is to position itself as a regulatory jurisdiction, meaning that businesses could come here, get licensed, and then operate internet poker or internet games in other states. And so what would allow the legislature to do is to say, well, look, citizens, especially our conservative citizens, we're not going to allow businesses to actually operate internet poker in Missouri, but what we will allow businesses to do is to operate internet poker in other states. Meanwhile, we, the government, could actually take a chunk of their proceeds as tax revenue. I don't ever see Missouri here being, at least in the kind of first wave of states that would adopt internet gambling. And if Missouri were actually looking to get in on the ground floor, I mean, there definitely is a political play there that's available. But seeing what other issues kind of are at stake in Jefferson City, I would doubt highly that internet gambling would really be near the top. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what Missouri decides to do, especially if federal legislation is enacted that would allow various states to kind of opt in or opt out of a big regulatory program for internet gaming.
Well, you touched upon a couple of things there. You said about being on the ground floor. I know in Nevada, they started, I think, in 2001 looking at online gaming and everything. And they've wanted to be the ahead of the curve and the first state to do this. And they're known with Las Vegas and its reputation. If they're not one of the first ones to get the bill enacted that actually enables them to do something, there are going to be some major disappointments within Nevada, I know. Question for you, I guess, is each of these states now seems to be acting as their almost own autonomy. Are they going to be able to link together? Are we going to have 50 different states with 50 different laws? Are we going to, you know, have different sites only played within the borders of those states? What's going to happen there?
I think what's going to happen is that if we have, let's say that all the states this year, New Jersey, Florida, Iowa, Nevada, California, and Hawaii, let's say all, for whatever reason, this year they decided to enact internet gambling regulation, and let's say some of those states actually had provisions in their laws that would allow them to compact or to do business with other states that allow internet gaming. What I'm not expressly clear on is whether those states would actually have to seek federal permission of some kind, because essentially any kind of business between two states under federal law is called interstate commerce, and generally interstate commerce is kind of the purview of the federal government. So what I'm not expressly clear on is whether two states that decided to do business with each other on matters of internet gambling would actually have to go to the federal government and say, listen, guys, we need a legal opinion on whether we can do this. And if that's true, we'll have to see again whether the federal government would be willing to acquiesce to that. No idea really how to answer that at this point, other than if it's probably likely there will be a number of states that will legalize and regulate internet gambling long before the federal government does. And I think if that happens, then the federal government is definitely going to have to deal with that question, and seriously.
All right, Chris, I've only got about 30 seconds left here. Tell me where we stand for federal legislation. I know Congressman Joe Barton of Texas was going to introduce legislation. Has he gotten support from other members of the House, and is there anything going on in the Senate?
No to the first question on Barton. He's not introduced legislation yet. What I can tell is that the support really isn't there for it yet. On the Senate, to answer briefly, absolutely nothing is happening there at the moment.
All right, Chris, we appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Chris Krafcik, an independent research analyst working for gambling industry publishers and consultancies around the world. By the way, one quick note on Illinois. Yesterday, the Illinois House approved a major expansion of legalized gambling. The House voted 65-50 to approve five new casinos, including one in downtown Chicago. The closest one to downtown right now would be either Joliet or Hammond, Indiana. This is the first time Illinois has expanded gambling in a long time, and we'll keep our eye on that, and certainly whether they put poker rooms in those places. As for today, Dennis, we're all out of time, so I'm going to wrap things up, and I will see you tomorrow at the Rio. I can't wait to get out there.
Sounds good. All right.
And you're going to be playing, what's your first event, do you know? Are you playing in the 1K this weekend?
I'm definitely going to be playing that one. Not for sure what my first event's going to be. And for the first time ever when we had a guest, I think I had more questions at the end of it than I did at the beginning. We'll have to have Chris back here sometime.
Absolutely. We'll do more with him. He was terrific. Thanks to Chris Krafcik and Alon McCarron and our sponsors, Harrah's St. Louis and Homestead Financial Mortgage. For great rates, call 800-GRANNY-8. For Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.